Welcome back to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is the Monday Brown Bagger. The date is February 9, 2009. Our second guest is Sakra Sanders, who is the editor for the website protestbarrack.net and has written numerous articles for the Corp Watch. Hello?
Hello. Hi. Thanks very much for having me.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. I hope I enunciated your first name properly. It's a very unique name.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, you did great.
And the first question I have for you, in the past, we did an interview with Larson from the Western Shoshone Nation, and they put out an article, the Defense Committee for the Western Shoshone Nation put out an article which talked about the transnational corporations coming out of Canada and how these mining corporations like Barrick Gold and others are not adhering to international law, and the Canadian government will not enforce the international law. I noticed that you were talking a little bit about that. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, sure. Right now, there are actually no laws in Canada that protect human rights, including the rights of Indigenous people or labor rights, for their corporations operating abroad. The laws are really old and they haven't caught up with globalization yet, and the powers that be don't necessarily want them to catch up. So, no, for corporations operating abroad, Canada does not even have, the laws in place to hold them in line to any standards.
And also in Papua New Guinea, the Barrick Gold security guard, one of their security guards, shot and killed a teenager. And I read this on the website, the Lake Kwal website. I read it on one of their lakes. Did you hear a little bit about that? And could you tell our listening audience a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, there's been human rights charges happening at the Porgera mine in Papua New Guinea for years now, even before Barrick owned the mine when it was Placer Dome. Placer Dome actually admitted to, I believe, 7 of the deaths, of the killings. And basically what happens is there's this mine there, and it's built, and it's right in the middle of where there's all these local inhabitants, and the people are just pushed literally to the margins of the mine. And the people there are traditional alluvial miners, which is basically panning for gold. And now that the mine is there, they say they have all the mining rights, and they're calling these alluvial miners illegal. And they shoot them for so-called trespassing on the mine site. Even though there's many walkways and, the mine is very much right in the middle of where they're at. And it's a huge problem. It's a huge problem with getting the word out as well. We had pictures of the autopsy. Barrick personnel were at the autopsy of this young boy that got shot. And they haven't even made any official remark on the death yet, regardless of the fact that I've inquired about it a bunch of times. And so, of course, we posted the autopsy reports to our website. We have a lot of testimony regarding it. And, Barrick doesn't respond to it. The mainstream media doesn't pick up on it. And so it's a big problem. Even with a lot of documentation, it's very difficult to get the word out about what's happening there.
And so our listening audience can go take a look at all this information you have. Could you give the listening audience a quick link where they can basically punch it in and take a look at it?
Oh, sure. That would be on the front page of protestbarrack.net. But fortunately, if you go there, that's actually, slightly, older news. If you go to protestbarrack.net right now, what you'll see as the main article is the divestment of the Norwegian Pension Fund. And the Norwegian Pension Fund actually didn't have enough, which is a part of, Norway's government. It's basically it's Norway's social security. They looked at the Porgera mine, which is where these killings have been happening, and while they weren't there when a killing happened, so they didn't directly witness it themselves, they were able to comment on the riverine tailings disposal, which they practice in Papua New Guinea. So basically what they're doing there, Barrick is dumping the mine waste directly into the river, and Barrick says that they comply with Papua New Guinea laws, but that's just because Papua New Guinea laws are so lax. And in fact, there's only one compliance point for measuring mine waste, and it's 165 kilometers downstream from the river, or from the mine.
And how much waste are we talking about? How many tons? Because it said in the article here, you were saying 79 tons of waste for every ounce of gold extract. So how much waste are we talking about being dumped in the rivers?
Okay, well, that's 79 tons of waste per ounce of gold. That is an average throughout the entire gold mining industry. So, that is totally absurd, and that's something that was calculated by the No Dirty Gold campaign of Oxfam and Earthworks. For the particular gold, particular Porgera mine, I don't have figures in terms of what the overall waste is, because that includes stuff like waste rock, which they don't include. But let's see, I can look it up on Barrick's website right now. They'll actually give you the whole, the grams per ore ratio.
Yeah.
So for the Porgera mine, it's about 0.104 ounces per ton. So about a tenth of an ounce per ton is their proven and probable reserve. And that's just for the ore body. And let me remind you that ore bodies that you find gold in, you also find a lot of other nasty stuff like sulfides and heavy metals and things like that. So per ton of that very nasty ore, you're going to get about a tenth of an ounce of gold.
Yeah, because also I'm from the northern tip of Vancouver Island, a small town called Port Hardy. We had Utah mines up there. It's been shut down for about 10 years or something like that. And what it was is a large open pit mine. And what they used to do was all the waste, they used to dump it right into the ocean. And you're talking about looking at it now, the amount of environmental damage done was tremendous. And what they've done is they've sold all the equipment off and headed down to South America. And the question I have for you, I have my tech in the studio with me right now, Hakim. Hakim came back from El Salvador. He went over there and he was monitoring the election down in El Salvador. He was talking about how corporations like Blackwater and others are hired by the mining companies to protect the interests of the mining, the mines down there. And the question I have for you, and I also have Hakim comment too, you know, what gives these foreign corporations a right to step within other countries, and then basically, to, you know, what they've done is they've stolen the rights, all this stuff from the people, and the few rich people are benefiting while the poor are being sacrificed. You know, have you heard anything about what's happening down in South America at this time?
Well, yes, there's tons of mining conflicts happening all over Latin America, South America, Central America. You know, there are instances of, mine security being, not so much Blackwater. Blackwater is a fairly new one, but most of the other mercenary companies you'll find actually had their root in guarding, extractive industries such as oil and mining. In some places, such as Peru, the mining company, like Barrick, is actually able to hire the police. So the police, in their off-duty, are going to be working as security for the mining corporation. Another example of this, but with the military, is in Indonesia, where Freeport-McMoRan was found to have made payments to the tune of $20 million over 5 years directly to the Indonesian military, not through any government intermediary. And so this creates an extreme conflict of interest when you have a mining corporation that basically has its own army, you know, and sometimes it has the army with an additional mandate, you know, an army that also works for the state or also works for, you know, that local area. And so it can be very dangerous, and there's conflicts of interest arise, obviously, when people get shot.
And as I was mentioning about South America, I just came across an article information. You were talking about the local law enforcement. Well, there's an agency set up by the United States government, funded by the U.S. government, U.S. taxpayers funding this. And since from the period of 2000 right up to 2005, 34 times the amount has been increased. And what they're doing is that they're doing the International Law Enforcement Academy in El Salvador, and they have satellites that are happening over in Peru. And Hakim, could I have you quickly comment on what you saw when you were down there in reference to the mining and basically Barrick Gold and other law enforcement, how they're acting towards the people?
Well, good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, everybody. Well, it's pretty much like she was saying. There is not just private companies providing security to the the different places where this mining is happening, but it's about the armies of the countries, the national armies. They got nothing to do in there. They shouldn't be guarding this kind of places. But you can find them in there really really often. You find out police. National police, you find the army taking care of it just because some people in the government has a few actions or bonus or whatever they get from the companies. And the problem is that they just try to make people, the communities feel, you know, the fear of being shot, being killed, and it's really tough. It's really tough when you go there and you see how I mean, they do whatever they want with whoever, a community leader. They just want them to stop bringing all this junk into their communities. People is getting sick. Babies are being born with health problems. And whoever does this kind of things and gets organized to oppose them, they just make them disappear. They get shot. And then they say, you know, it's been gangs related or a robbery or something like that.
Like a modern day death squad is what you're talking about.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, death squads is something that has been happening in, you know, El Salvador and Central America constantly. Seems 20 years ago or more. It's never been taken apart by all these peace treaties that they signed to stop conflicts, armed conflicts. So they have a, you know, a white card. They have a license to do whatever they want, pretty much.
Well, that's pretty amazing. And the next question I have for you, Sakurai, is down in Nevada, the Barrick Gold has now opened a gigantic mining facility down there. I noticed that there was a lawsuit against them. A brief history about this mine that I've been told about. Apparently, Bush Sr. had given Barrick Gold this mine for next to nothing, a song and a dance, and Bush Sr. later, after his got out of his administration done, he ended up being employed by Barrick Gold. Do you feel that Bush Sr. or possibly GW or anyone within the Bush administration that just got out of power, do you feel that they might have played a part in basically causing Barrick Gold to win this case, which they shouldn't have won?
Well, no, I'm not sure if they played a direct hand, but definitely the fact that the mining corporations have a lot of politicians in their pocket. There's a lot to not reform very, very old prospecting laws that should be reformed in the U.S., and I know it's very much the same thing with Canada in terms of the need to reform these very old mining laws that are from, you know, the colonial settler periods that were meant to encourage prospecting and settling further west. But yes, I mean, you know, most definitely, even the Bureau of Land Management, even they were saying that it was the quote-unquote biggest gold heist since the days of Butch Cassidy, giving away $10 billion worth of gold for $10,000 to definitely a buddy of the Bush administration. I mean, you know, Clinton's a huge fan of the mining corporations too, though, so I just don't want to single out George Bush Sr., even though he was the chairman of the senior advisor, of the advisory board for Barrick Gold. And of course, you know, Mulroney as well, he's on the board of directors of Barrick Gold. Gustavo Cisneros, a huge media mogul in Venezuela, you know, who's, you know, partly one of the, you know, people or one of, you know, his media channels were in part behind the coup to oust Hugo Chavez. So Barrick definitely has, you know, its hands all over the place with all four extremely powerful people in the political arena, one of which is George Bush Sr.
And also, an article was put out by the Green Party, and the title of the article, "Are Peter Munk and Brian Mulroney Running Canada?" Did you have a chance to take a look at that? And also, what do you think about Mr. Munk advising Harper on the latest federal budget coming out of Canada?
Yes, I did get a chance to read that, and I think it's very troubling, the amount of you know, lobbying power that Barrick has. I've heard from my allies within the Canadian Network for Corporate Accountability, that Barrick Gold is one of the main corporations that's lobbying against any mandatory laws regulating, you know, foreign, you know, corporations, Canadian corporations acting abroad. So, of course, I find this very troubling. You know, what I maybe find more troubling is that just in December, Peter Munk got the Order of Canada, which is Canada's highest civilian honor. So, you know, we can all discuss it and, you know, kind of take it as a given that these companies are doing evil work, they're doing it for gold, you know, they're trampling on the rights of, you know, local landowners, indigenous people, they're trampling on human rights, they're, you know, getting in these shady situations with security. There's uprising against them, for example, in Tanzania. So we can all agree that this is bad stuff that they're doing, but they're honored in Canada. You know, so the chairman and founder of this company gets the Order of Canada, Canada's highest civilian honor. If you go to Toronto, you see Peter Monk's name all over the place. There's the Peter Monk Cardiac Center. There's the Monk Center for International Studies at the University of Toronto. He's very, very much honored in Toronto and the rest of Canada as a philanthropist. And of course, where does he get all that money from? He gets it from, you know, all of his shady dealings and destroying the environment and, you know, disrespecting human rights in other countries and in Canada and in the United States as well.
Well, we also have to remember about the Canadian history and how the First Nations people have had their land not only taken from them, they've had the resources on it exploited. They've had the mining rights, the trees have been raped from the land and everything. That involves, there's churches involved with that, the Canadian federal government involved with that, the residential schools. The list goes on and on. What is shown the history of Canada, it's shown that there's been no respect towards the First Nations people who under the Indian Act are considered pieces of property owned by the federal government, which in itself is a violation of human rights. And what I'd like to say is, how can a federal government call themselves, they represent human rights when they're basically, they're owner of people. So they basically, they're modern day slave owners is what they are. And if they revolt, if they basically get rid of the Indian Act and treat the First Nations as equal citizens, then I will say that they actually recognize human rights, but they're not willing to do that at this time. We only have a couple minutes left. I was wondering if you could quickly leave the listening audience with some contact information and your website and any last thoughts that you may have.
Yes. Well, my website is protestbarracks.net. My contact information is on there. I'm at sakura.saunders@gmail.com. You know, anyone that wants to get involved in the movement against, you know, Canadian mining corporations, I mean, just to hold them accountable, you know, for legal reform, for holding Barrick Gold accountable, for holding Goldcorp accountable, which is headquartered in Vancouver there, please, please, please get in touch with me. I can put you in touch with other local activists. We're planning a huge convergence around the shareholders meeting this May, where we're bringing a lot of community leaders from affected communities to come speak their mind at Barrick shareholder meeting. And we'd love a lot of support just to attract attention to their presence at these meetings. We brought them last year, and not one news outlet even reported on their presence. We got later news reports when we took them to Ottawa, but it was really pathetic, the media blackout in this country, especially around issues pertaining to Barrick Gold. So I just urge people to get involved. 60% of the world's mining corporations are located within Canada, or at least registered within Canada. So this is very much a Canadian issue. And, you know, please get in contact with me to see how you can get involved further. That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Sakura. And that was Sakura Saunders. This is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. The date is February 9th, 2009. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. Until I come back in 3 weeks' time, I say to the listening audience, have a great day.